Providing perspective, this is For the Record on Evolution 107.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the second half of For the Record on Evolution 107.9. My guest today is a dedicated environmentalist and member of the Burn Creek Stream Keepers. He is here today to talk with us about recent challenges local waterways have had to face, the work of the Burn Creek Stream Keepers, and how to connect yourself with your environment. It is my pleasure to welcome Mr. Paul Zapivnik to the show. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Now, Paul, there was a recent devastating fish kill at Burn Creek. Can you just bring our listeners up to speed about what happened?
Okay, sure. That was about a month ago now when that was the February 25-26 weekend when some stream keepers who were patrolling the creek on Sunday noticed dead fish in pools. We had been monitoring the creek looking for young salmon fry that should be hatching right about that time of year. Fry are small salmon babies that pop out of the gravel. And when we saw the dead fish, we were immediately worried, so we started working our way up and down the creek and kept finding more and more dead fish. So we phoned the city environmental hotline and got a very quick response. There was a fellow from their environmental services division who was down within about 20 minutes. Unfortunately, it appeared that whatever had passed through the creek killing the fish was all gone. So even though we took water samples, we were not able to identify what the substance was. But over the next day or two, working with the city and with BC Environment Ministry, we traced dead fish all the way up Burn Creek to above Edmund SkyTrain Station, which to us indicated that the substance must have come, entered the creek through a storm drain somewhere in the upper watershed, more than likely somewhere in the Edmonds area of southeast Burnaby. And over the next few days, we collected over 350 dead trout, over a dozen dead coho salmon. The trout live in the creek year-round. The coho salmon spend 1 year in the creek after they're born, before they go out to sea. And so it did not look very good at all.
Now, are the numbers of dead fish still the same, or were there more found later on?
Basically, what we did was, working in concert with the Environment Ministry, we collected as many of the dead fish as we could. Now, as I already mentioned, they couldn't really establish what killed the fish. It was some sort of a toxic substance, whether it was chlorine from a hot tub, or some sort of a cleanser or something from an auto body shop, or whatever it was long gone by the time we collected the fish. However, the biologists from the ministry were still interested in collecting as many of them as possible just to get an idea of, you know, what kind of species, what ages of fish, what sizes of fish were living in this urban creek. So we collected close to 400 in total over the next few days. And based on previous counts of what we had seen in the creek and on previous experience in doing these kinds of recovery efforts, the biologists now estimate that probably around 700 fish were killed.
Wow. Now, when people think of a creek, let's put this into perspective.
Sure.
When people think of a creek, they usually think of a just small sort of a singular trickling stream. But can you explain to our listeners just how big the Burn Creek watershed really is and how many areas affect it?
Sure, that's an excellent point. Something that a lot of people don't realize, that in our modern cities, especially here on the West Coast, it might differ in other parts of Canada or North America, but here, basically, all of the street drains, some people call them storm drains, we like to call them rain drains, because basically any rain that falls on the streets, into parking lots, onto buildings, it all gets channeled into those drains that you see along the streets. And the Burn Creek watershed, from that point of view, is huge. If you kind of imagine southeast Burnaby, the northern extent is roughly the Kingsway Ridge. So if you think of our main street of Kingsway up there, and then the watershed extends east, actually a little bit past Nelson Street, west to past Nelson Street, and east into the Edmonds area, almost as far as the corner of where Burnaby touches New Westminster. So all of the storm drain system in that area drains into the creek in some way or other. There are also three tributaries, John Matthews Creek, Frogger's Creek, and Gray Creek, that all feed into Burn Creek. So it is a large expanse. In its native state, of course, the creek was visible all the way up to approximately 10th and Kingsway. The upper watershed has, of course, been covered over the years and built on. We like to call that part of the watershed. We call it the creek under the streets because it's still there. It's just not visible. It's all been channeled into storm drain systems. Then there's a second section of the creek, which is probably the most natural section that's left, and that's the ravine section, which starts around Edmund SkyTrain Station and goes down the Burn Creek Ravine Park all the way to approximately South Point Drive. At that point, there's one more little area, which we call the artificial spawning and rearing habitat, and that's an artificial channel and a couple of pools that were put in near Meadow Avenue at the bottom of South Point Drive, where it becomes Burn Drive, and that was done by the city as compensation when they put in the big road. And the last chunk is it's basically just been ditched from that point on down to the Fraser River. And it's been that way probably for, I don't know, who knows, 100 years. Way back in the old days when they were originally logging the forests, if you can imagine, all the part of it used to be covered by forests.
Mm-hmm.
And the creek, even way back then, the bottom portion was channeled to provide a means of getting the lumber down to the river.
So there's hundreds, maybe thousands of people and homes that are directly in contact with the creek, whether they know it or not, whether their houses and streets are built on top of it or and its tributaries, or just whether they're generally in contact with it.
Exactly. Yeah, everybody is connected to the creek. They may not realize it, but that we try to show things. I'm sure some people might have seen the little yellow fish that are painted near storm drains.
Mm-hmm.
Those are meant to try to remind people that all of that water does lead to local creeks. Unfortunately, we've heard that some people get the idea that if they run across a drain and it doesn't have a little fish, little yellow fish painted on it, then it's okay to pour stuff down that drain. That's not the case. It just simply means that we haven't been able to get out there and mark every single drain. That's all done on a volunteer basis. We like doing that with schools and, you know, Boy Scouts and Girl Guide groups. But it's impossible to do every drain on a volunteer basis. But we really like to point out to people that, you know, nothing should go down those drains except nice, clean rainwater.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's now time for a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with Paul Zapivnik, a member of the Burn Creek Streamkeepers, to talk a little bit more about protecting our local waterways and also what exactly the Burn Creek Streamkeepers do. We'll return in a moment. You're listening to Evolution For the Record on Evolution 107.9. And now back to For the Record on Evolution 107.9. Welcome back to For the Record on Evolution 107.9. We're speaking today with Paul Zapivnik, a local environmentalist and dedicated member of Burnaby's Burn Creek Streamkeepers. Paul, just before the break, we were talking about the recent devastating fish kill at Burn Creek. Now, is this... I'm just wondering here, we were talking about how homes have been built over top of part of Burn Creek and streets have been built over top. How tricky in a growing urban area is it to protect local waterways in areas like Burn Creek?
Well, there are a number of issues. Of course, the one that we've already been talking about is the way the storm drains are connected directly to the creek. So there are issues with chemicals, household cleansers, paints, things like that. People might not simply be aware that those drains lead directly to creeks and that anything that goes down those drains is not treated. So that's probably one of our main issues, is just simply getting people to remember, please don't pour anything down those drains. If you're washing your car, even try to use a very modest amount of soap. Wash your car and your lawn. The soap will not hurt your grass.
Mm-hmm.
Just little steps like that that everybody can take to help protect that creek. The other issue that we have, of course, and that's already been alluded to in urban development, and it's a common problem for all urban creeks, and that is the issue of what we call impermeable surfaces.
Mm.
That comes from the word, of course, permeable, which means some things can pass through something. So ground, natural ground, is permeable. When it rains, water hits the ground. It sinks into the ground and gradually, slowly works its way through the ground into aquifers and eventually goes into that creek. Burn Creek never dries up. I mean, we've had dry spells of like 6 weeks, 7 weeks with no rain. Burn Creek is always running. People say, where does that water come from? It's still rainwater. It's just been stored in the ground. There's no mountains. There's no snow around here. It's all groundwater. So that's the next important thing, is that we're trying to ameliorate the effects of development in the sense of trying to get people not to pave over their whole yard. Big developments now, big condos, big shopping malls, say like the Highgate development, they're required by the city to have measures in place to accumulate rainwater and release it more slowly so it doesn't just go shooting off into the drains and straight into the creek. Because there's two problems with that. One problem is that you get these massive flushes of water going through the creek, and it just it contributes to erosion. It can blast out the nest of eggs that the fish have laid in the fall.
Is that when you see when the stream, I noticed some pictures on your website that when the stream gets really murky, is that one of the problems that happens?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's important to try to contain that. Of course, you can't turn the clock back. We can't undevelop cities.
Mm-hmm.
But we can certainly take positive steps with future developments and be a little more cognizant. We use things like rain barrels, disconnect rooftop gutters from the drain system, let them drain naturally onto the ground and seep into the ground. It's little things like that that all add up.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about the Burn Creek Stream Keepers. Burnaby is very active in local waterways. We are the home of World Rivers Day and BC Rivers Day.
Right.
You've been active in this investigation of Burn Creek, but can you tell us a little bit about who you are and how your group started?
Sure. Basically, it goes back to the days of, maybe the early 80s, and it was actually a group of men from the Vancouver Angling and Game Association who first started cleaning up Burn Creek. I'm told that the creek was basically dead by the 60s or 70s. It had been used as a dumping ground. It was, it was not really supporting fish life. So these guys got together and they worked with the city, they worked with the province, and they managed to get the creek cleaned up to the point where they thought they could start stocking it again.
Hmm.
So they reintroduced trout and salmon, and lo and behold, they survived and were coming back on their own and spawning on their own. And so they did an excellent job. Then back in 1998, there was another tragedy. Again, somebody poured a toxin down the creek. That situation was even worse than this more recent one. Apparently, up to 5,000 fish died in that spill.
Yeah.
And that galvanized the community. And a whole bunch of new people came out and said, hey, this is terrible. What can we do to help? How can we change this? And that was sort of when the Burn Creek Stream Keepers were started. Basically, they joined forces with the guys from the Vancouver Angling and Game Association and created this new organization, which kind of took over from the previous people, some of whom are still members of the Stream Keepers. They're kind of we like to call them our elders. They've been around and doing this for 20, 30 years. And so, yeah, that 1998 spill, that was the impetus that got the new community group going.
Okay.
And you've also, I believe you mentioned the Stream of Dreams Society, and that was also the impetus for that. I'm sure people who drive around Burnaby and all over the Lower Mainland have probably seen fish on fences around schoolyards.
Yeah, yeah.
And that also grew out of this tragic spill back in 1998. And that basically started when it was kind of a combination of community people and stream keepers who, one woman was kind of upset about the corner of Kingsway and Edmonds where some properties had been torn down but nothing had replaced them, and it just looked kind of ugly. They had a big chain link fence around it. So she was thinking about ways to beautify this corner.
Hmm.
And then when she heard about the fish kill, she had this brain kind of, she had this flash, and she went, wait, how about if we brought those fish back to life as a mural on the fence? So she contacted the stream keepers, and the stream keepers, tending to be kind of, in the mud, getting their hands dirty kind of people, went, art? What are you talking about? But gradually the concept grew, and next, you know, so the stream keepers started working with this, and eventually they got school children and the community involved and painted close to 3,000 fish for that original Stream of Dreams, which is still on the corner of Kingsway and Edmonds. And from that point, one of the originators, Louise Towell, and Joan Karn, who's kind of our informal chair of our streamkeeping group, they started running with this program because people began calling and saying, hey, can we do a mural? Can we do a mural at our school? Can we do a mural in our community? So the next thing they knew, this had become almost like a full-time job for them. So a couple of years ago now, they actually incorporated a nonprofit society and with board members, and just earlier this year, Stream of Dreams became achieved charitable status. And so far, the society has taught, I believe it's over 32,000 school kids around BC and also expanding into other parts of Canada. And the focus is on watersheds. How does your local watershed work? And once the kids have been taught about how watersheds work and have heard the story of the death and rebirth of Burn Creek, then they get to paint what we call those dream fish, which are a reminder to people and communities that they are all connected to those watersheds.
All right. Well, it's now time for a quick break. I'm Jill Batty, and you're listening to Evolution 107.9. We're talking about protecting local watersheds, the good news with Burn Creek coming up, all with Paul Zapivnik of the Burn Creek Stream Keepers. Stay tuned.
And now back to For the Record on Evolution 107.9.
We're back on Evolution 107.9, our show For the Record, with our guest Paul Zapivnik to talk about protecting our local rivers and streams and preventing disasters like the recent devastating fish kill at Burn Creek. Paul, really quickly, let's go back to the fish kill. I hear there's been some good news.
Yes, we've been really heartened by the fact that we've been starting to find baby fish in the creek. That was one of our big concerns when we found all the fish dead a month ago. We were so worried that whatever the poison was, it might have also killed the eggs that salmon laid last autumn.
Mm-hmm.
We have chum and coho salmon that come back to the creek in October and November, and they dig their we call them reds, their nests in the creek.
Mm-hmm.
And not long after the spill, we saw one or two of the tiny little fry. They're only a couple centimeters long, and we thought, oh my gosh, I wonder if they survived. And then about a week ago, we were out doing some work in the habitat area, and there they were. There were probably hundreds of these little fry, and we were just so thrilled to see them. We managed to net a couple of them and identify them as chum fry, and the chum salmon spend only a couple weeks in the creek before they go out into the ocean, and that is just such fantastic news. And now we're also hoping that if the chum survived,
mm-hmm.
perhaps we might get some coho.
Mm-hmm.
And trout as well, because the trout should have been spawning. They spawn later than the salmon, but they could have been spawning just before the kill. So if they managed to get in there and lay their eggs before the toxin entered the system, we're really hoping that we'll see some trout, baby trout as well. The other little bit of good news is that we've been trapping about every 2 weeks since the kill. The Ministry of Environment did the initial trapping, and since then the stream keepers have been continuing just to see if any fish are coming back to the creek. And this last weekend we did trap 4 trout in the spawning system near Meadow Avenue, which is also a really good sign because that means that they're starting to repopulate the creek from some of the tributaries. I suspect they're probably coming back from maybe John Matthews or Frogger's Creek. They're discovering that Burn Creek is safe again, so they're going to gradually wiggle their way through the system, which is another really positive sign.
So you're really encouraged by this news, and I know you're really passionate about your work. What inspired you to first become involved with the Stream Keepers and get involved with your local environment?
Well, my wife and I moved here about 4 years ago. We live right on the ravine in a townhouse complex. And one day we just, we're down at Rivers Day, which of course is connected to BCIT.
Mm-hmm.
And we ran across a booth that was there from the Burn Creek Stream Keepers and chatted to some of them. And at that time, we weren't really environmentalists at all. In fact, now I like to call myself an accidental environmentalist. But they kind of went, you know, come out to a meeting, whatever, and we went, I don't know if we want to hang out with these crazy environmental types. But so we were, anyway, we were just exploring the neighborhood not long after having moved in and checking out some of the trails in the ravine. And one, so the first fall that we lived here, we were just bopping down the trail one October, and we heard this huge splashing in this little creek, and we looked in, and there were some gorgeous chum salmon spawning. I mean, they were huge. They were 70, 80 centimeters long in this
wow.
tiny little creek in the middle of the city, and it just blew our minds. We must have watched those that one pair of fish for well over an hour. We were just enthralled. So we thought, okay, we got to check this out. So we went to a meeting of the Burn Creek Stream Keepers and discovered that, hey, they were normal people. You know, they ranged in age from teenagers to grandparents, hunters, fishermen, environmentalists, engineers, you know, a broad spectrum of people. And very practical, very down-to-earth bunch of people who also enjoy having fun. Like a lot of environmental groups, I think, have been tagged with kind of being all doom and gloom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is, everything's terrible, the sky is falling. Well, you know, on our bad days, we might feel like that too, but we try to emphasize the positive. We work closely with the city of Burnaby. We have great relations with the engineering department and the parks department. We work with the Department of Fisheries and Oceans. We work with BC Environment Ministry, you know, where we will do anything to, you know, make this little creek a better place and have fun doing it.
Well, that's fantastic. Now, you mentioned about how, you know, it's everyday people who are joining this group, and topics of like sustainability and sustainable growth are sort of commonplace now for people, but I've read that you think sometimes people misunderstand the concept. Can you explain that to us?
Well, there are different ways to look at sustainability. Sustainability, I think, has become a very broad brush.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people now relate it to development,
mm-hmm.
and there are sustainable ways to do development, or perhaps I should say more sustainable than others. But I think that something that sometimes gets lost in this picture is that often the focus seems to shift towards always the human aspect. Like, how do we improve our neighborhoods for
mm-hmm.
people? How do we improve our parks for people? How do we improve, you know, living conditions for people? But we tend to a little bit forget about the other animals and the forests and the creeks and the other things that are out there that I, at least to me, they're so important to a healthy lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I strongly believe that if other animals can't survive in the same environment that we're in, that must be damaging to us in not only in psychological ways, but eventually to our health as well. Because if they can't survive, what's to say that, you know, it's not impacting our health and our well-being as well? So there's different ways to look at it, but I think I'm very encouraged. I've been to various conferences over the last couple of years, and in fact, a lot of the impetus for changing the way we develop our cities is actually coming from developers and from engineering firms, because they're starting to see a payoff in it. People will pay extra to live next to a beautiful, healthy creek,
yeah.
next to, you know, a lovely ravine. So some people, I think, get trapped into the idea that sustainability is expensive, that sustainability means, you know, we can't do certain things, but I think we have to always accentuate the positive. I mean,
mm-hmm.
what is it about sustainable approaches to the environment, towards development, towards health, that can make our cities a better place to live?
Mm-hmm. Really quickly, Paul, we're just wrapping up here. Is there anything next on the agenda for the Stream Keepers?
Yeah, we're having our spring salmon releases, and those are always a blast. We get school kids from local elementary schools to come down and help us release the little fish into the creek. So we've got that coming up at the end of April and in early May. We'll also be appearing at the Burnaby Rhododendron Festival to let people know about invasive plant species, which are also a problem in our urban areas. So we've got a full slate. If people like to check out our website at burncreek.org. We always have a list there of things that we're doing and things that we have done. And so whatever touches your interest, feel free to contact us.
Wonderful. Well, best wishes for all your upcoming events. My thanks to Paul Zapivnik for joining us here on Evolution 107.9's For the Record. Once again, if you want more information about the Stream Keepers and their upcoming projects, you can check out their website at www.burncreek.org. I'm Jill Batty. Tune in tomorrow when we return again after the news at 1 o'clock on Evolution 107.9.